Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Now, a very warm welcome to Dr. Eamon Shanahan, who has joined us in studio and who hasn't come alone.
No, I haven't indeed. So I've brought with me Mr. Taha. Mr. Taha is a consultant urologist who was telling me before we came on air that he's been in Ireland for the last 10 years and has been in Dublin and Galway and other places and is now in Tralee in the Bon Secours Hospital. Mr. Taha is a consultant urologist. So he deals with issues to do with bladder, prostate and things like that. And that's what we were thinking about having a chat about today.
Okay, and it's an issue that comes up quite frequently on Medical Matters.
I suppose the context for this, and I'll leave Mr. Taha to talk about it in a second, he knows much more about it than I would. The situation is that prostate cancer, I suppose if all men live long enough, there is a good chance that many men will develop a prostate cancer. So there's a certain element of, as we get older, it is the case. The reality is, however, is that quite a number of men not just have prostate cancer, but will die from prostate cancer. And the purpose of the exercise is to try to identify those men whose prostate issues are ones that may shorten their lives, in other words that they may have a prostate cancer which will require treatment, and that's very much where the emphasis of this is going. It's about the appropriate identification of prostate cancer. I think it's important to stress that there are a lot of older men who will die with prostate cancer but not because of prostate cancer, but there are men who also die of prostate cancer, and it's trying to identify that group and have them appropriately treated.
Yeah, fair enough. Mr. Taha, you're very welcome first of all.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Can you tell us a little bit, first of all, just to go back to the very basics, what is the prostate?
So the prostate is actually an extra secondary, if you like me saying, urological glands. The main job of it is to secrete a kind of material that are very important for the urological tract healthiness and for the semen from ejaculation point of view functions. The most one that is had been studied well is the PSA, which is prostate specific antigen. It's a kind of protein that the human males secreted in the semen. And the prostate is situated in the junction between the bladder and the urethra, surrounding the last part of the urethra, which is the pipe bringing the urine outside like a donut, as I said to my patients. And this protein had been studied extensively, and the only theoretical explanation for its function is that after the ejaculation came out, it go into solid phase, and then it have to become liquid again for fertility point of view. And they found this protein help in the re-liquifications of this protein. That's the main function that's been described. And it is specific from the prostate, as we all know, but the only thing that most of the people ignore or doesn't know is not specific for prostate cancer. In other way around, it when you see a PSA in any container, it came from the prostate for sure, but not necessarily have to come from prostate cancer tissue. That's the only thing we like really to flag it. So that's mainly the prostate. When I say it's secondary gland tissue, that means you can have a normal life without it. That's the word we can roughly describe it as, an organ in relation to the human body.
Okay, and obviously it's only in men and not in women.
Exactly, yeah.
Have you been seeing in your years, in recent years, an increase in the amount of men with prostate cancer?
Yeah, luckily enough, we had the Irish Society of Urology meetings 2 weeks ago. They're doing a large job from the cancer point of view, in addition to the prostate cancer program in Ireland. And the referral had been increased by 55% over the last few years. There are 3 points going together in the health system that will increase detection of any cancer. Number one, the availability of the health system services and investigation. The improvement in the quality of life and increase in the age group of the population. And finally, the increase of awareness. Putting all this together, prostate cancer is actually taking the top rank now in Ireland. And the numbers are huge increasingly. And you can detect that from the notification of our health system and making the prostate cancer as priority in urology by creating what we call by the Rapid Access Prostate Clinic. Is definitely increasing for these 3 points in my opinion. But if you talk about epidemiology or of the prostate cancer itself, I will not say it is increasing, no. But actually the detection of prostate cancer
detection is increasing. Yeah. And Eamon, partially, I would imagine that men are, you and I have said this before, men are getting better at checking themselves and reporting symptoms to
absolutely.
Their GP.
And they are being good. And to be fair, there is it's kind of the days of the stoic individuals who sort of soldiered on and battled on despite the fact that they're having desperate problems with the waterworks. That becomes less and less, and we're certainly seeing men are much more are much more likely to come forward and report the symptoms. And I think the thing is that in terms of the detection of prostate cancers, we have to start with the detection of symptoms. There is not, for good reasons, a prostate cancer screening program like cervical check or breast check or colon cancer. But what we need to do is have a high, what we call, index of suspicion. So the idea behind that is that if you have the suggestion, the suspicion that a man may have a prostate cancer. I mean, probably one of the biggest factors is the family history. If there's a first degree relative, a parent, a father or a brother who's had prostate cancer, it very much increases the risk of a man having a prostate cancer. But there are other risk factors as well. And I suppose taken all together, what it's about is taking it on to the next stage. So if we have a suspicion, yes, we can do the prostate blood test. We also need to do the examination of the prostate gland, because it's the texture of the gland is what you're feeling when we do the rectal examination. And if any of these suggest there might be a hint or a suggestion of a prostate cancer, then we refer the patient on to our urology colleagues.
And at what age should a man start getting his PSA levels checked?
I will comment on what Dr. Shannon said, if you give me a chance about that. So the screening program, as Dr. Shannon said, is not yet, in my opinion, we have to add the word yet to this, because internationally it's a question that has been there for years. Should we screen everyone for prostate cancer? For the last few years, there was no evidence to support that. And they are working in supporting that, because they started to find a very increase in awareness of the population of the prostate cancer. So maybe in the next few years, can it be a screening program? Possible, but not yet confirmed. Now, the only thing I will add from the symptoms point of view, as Dr. Shanahan said, most of the people, when they get lower urinary tract symptoms, what you call it, they come to you with a very high concern, this is prostate cancer. But thankfully, that's not all the time the case. Prostate cancer had been definitely confirmed that when you come with a lower urinary tract symptoms, that doesn't mean you have prostate cancer. If you come with a very bad symptoms, that doesn't mean you have a very advanced prostate cancer disease. And if you have no symptoms, that doesn't mean you have no prostate cancer. So the symptoms actually, as Dr. Shannon said, it only brought up the suspicion for more workup rather than confirming anything else.
So if there's a man listening and he's getting up to go to the bathroom several times a night, don't panic. That doesn't necessarily mean you have prostate cancer.
You just need to come for someone to check. Okay. Regarding the age that you mentioned about before you go, the family history that actually make a huge weight. Because people, they think, oh, I have my father who had a prostate cancer before or whatever. The prostate cancer history that make weight is if you have a family member who get prostate cancer below 60, not more than that. If you have someone who have a genetic mutation, which is a kind of known disease, make you a family member prone to prostate cancer. That's the only family history that we will be really concerned about. From the age cutoff, as you ask about that, the only evidence that we use now as per the European guideline is we advise for PSA check for a man who is 50 or above, if you want, and he had to be well consented and well informed. What that means, he have to be open-minded that he might need to go for more than one test, and some of them might be invasive. At the end of the day, we might not find an answer. So that's, I would say, that three-step phases of consenting someone. You want to do the PSA, you're over 50, do it, but you have to be aware of 1, 2, 3, 4.
The other cutoff
is age group. If you have a family member or family history of prostate cancer, the age group will go down to 45. So we'll advise anyone with family history less than 60 to check himself over the age of 45.
Under 40 is relatively rare?
Yes.
Very rare. They only reported scientifically with the genetic mutation of BRCA2, PRAC2. This is a gene mutation. If you have that gene mutation in your family, you have to be checked before 40.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's very rare.
And then, likewise, as with all cancers, I assume that the older you get, the more you're prone to...
It is
possibly
more prone, but on the same time, it puts you in the good idea that if you do have prostate cancer, it's most of the time very early and less likely to be aggressive. But if you get it too early in your age, it's most likely large volume and more aggressive.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, we've lots to explore. And I'm sure listeners have questions as well. Just to remind you all, if you would like to send in a question for Mr. Taha or indeed Dr. Eamon Shanahan, who's staying with us, we're talking specifically today about prostate issues and prostate cancer. We'll talk a little more about the treatment of it and the advances that have been made in that direction. That's coming up in just a moment.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Now, if you've just tuned in, you're with Talk About. We're on Medical Matters. We've got Dr. Eamon Shanahan with us. We've also got Dr. Taha from the Bonds in Tralee, who is a consultant urologist. And we're talking about new ways of diagnosing prostate and indeed treating prostate cancer. Before we come on to the new ways of diagnosing it and indeed the new treatments for it, a listener wants to ask you, Mr. Taha, should men have blood tests every year at a certain age to watch out for prostate cancer? And if left undetected, can it lead to bladder cancer? So there's two parts to that question.
For the first part, I think we answered already.
You did.
The advice is to start checking that if they wish and will inform and discuss that with their GP after the age of 50. Considering that they have no family history of prostate cancer. Regarding the second part, there is completely no relation between prostate cancer and bladder cancer. Complete different origin and complete different histology. The question might be, if you have a late detection of prostate cancer, that means you get a worse disease. Most of the time, the answer is no. Prostate cancer is known to be a very slowly progressing disease, and that's why it brought up the ideas of keeping an eye on a patient with prostate cancer without even intervention. Yeah. What you call by active surveillance.
Watchful waiting.
And active surveillance, yeah.
So talk to me about treatments for it. I gather from what you've been saying all along, it is highly treatable, but catching it early is the thing, is it?
Well, yeah, the most important development happened actually in the prostate cancer is actually the detections idea more than treatment. The treatment is very dynamically improving, particularly in Ireland and Europe. And people are going, for example, I'm going to mention, for example, not for the limited example, what I can call now, the robotic surgery now has been introduced into the world. There is no open surgery anymore, and the laparoscopy is almost done. The robotic surgery is very good from the point of the patient's recovery mainly. That's the most important things. And me being a part of the people who had been trained in Ireland over the last 10 years, I have seen the people go to open prostatectomy, which is an open removal of the prostate, going to laparoscopy after that, and then finally robotics. And I don't like to talk too much to tell the difference, but you can see the patient who had the robotic surgery done next day down with you in the canteen looking for the lunch. While the open surgery, people would be in bed for 5 to 6 days. So it's a huge improvement in recovery.
What is robotic surgery? Because I'm conjuring up all kinds of things
no
in my
problem.
Mind.
So the robotic surgery, going back from the idea, is rather than you have the surgeon operating into the patient, standing up physically exhausted, if you like me saying, with a limitation of the eye, human eye vision, you have that improved by having a hands inside the patient connected to robot that will be working by the order of a fingers of the surgeon, which is only sitting
it's
on
like,
the same room.
Stuff.
So you're still controlling it?
Well, yes, absolutely.
But
not
physically?
Physically,
yeah.
So that take us from us, give us a very good visual acuity.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see with a very high definition cameras, and the hand is not your hand. It's actually
for all the world, it's for all the world like the surgeon, even though he's operating the machinery and looking at the equipment, it's for all the world like the surgeon has been shrunk down to about maybe a hundredth of his size. So it means you can actually, it's like as if the surgeon is inside the
more
person,
or less.
More or less inside, because the cameras are inside the patient, the equipment is inside the patient, being operated by the surgeon outside, and it just means you get a hugely magnified image, so that there's much less likelihood of damage. It's really the way things are going.
And you recover more quickly.
Oh, much more quickly. Yeah.
We call it by the post-traumatic human body reaction to the trauma. It is very minimized with the robotic surgery.
Yeah.
Because you literally have 5-6 holes in your tummy.
Yeah.
And you don't have the handling of the tissue with a human hand. It actually used the laparoscopy instrument, very fine, very tiny ones.
Yeah.
And that had changed the era of the surgery dramatically over the last few years.
And is it readily available?
It is available in almost all the public prostate cancer center. Beaumont, Tala, I think Galway, Cork, Limerick. They have that. And it is actually going to be something, if you like me saying, that's my expectations, is going to be available in every hospital, more or less, because it kind of taking this treatment from is going to be the standard of care, if you like saying. So with years, I think the number will increase and it will become more available. Yeah, I think so.
And in all cases, when somebody has prostate cancer, does the prostate always have to be removed?
Yeah, it is very advanced scientific talk now about the partial resection of the prostate. But overall now, the treatment of all is, if there is prostate cancer, you have to remove all the prostate. Yeah, that's the treatment we have now at the time being.
Some more questions for you. Listener says, this is from a gentleman. He says, I have a reading of 10 PSA. I'm 66 years old. Is that serious?
I don't like the word serious here, to be honest with you. I like the word that need to be looked after. Yes. Yeah. So you need to see someone to have his physical assessment from history point of view, examination, and other things before we mention the word serious.
Yeah. I think it's worth bearing in mind that, and we make this point time and time again, that the PSA, particular the substance, it's raised in a number of situations. It can be raised in case of prostate cancer. It can be raised in the case of men who have just large natural prostate glands. And indeed, you can also see it if there's an infection in the prostate gland, a prostatitis. It can also cause a rise in the PSA. And it also depends on context. I mean, if somebody had a PSA that was, let's say, 1 always and suddenly went to 10, that might be an issue. And of course, it depends on whether there's family history. So the answer is, it depends.
This is a very sad one, actually, from Sarah. She says her lovely dad had prostate cancer for 8 years. He passed away last year with cancer all over his bones and organ. She's wondering, how did it come from the prostate so quickly? He was in his 80s and lived a good quality of life with the prostate cancer, but we never really found out why it spread so fast.
Well, how can I say that the prostate cancer is not the cancer that tended to spread quickly and aggressively. That's not the normal nature of prostate cancer. But up to my knowledge now, when you find someone with a prostate cancer, he already had these cancerous cells in his prostate for at least 5 to 10 years beforehand. In other way around, it's not something to happen over the night. So when you mentioned that he had 8 years, actually, it had been written in books, by the way, from the time you diagnose prostate cancer until you get the prostate cancer started to move into your bones, it's around 8 years. That actually statistically had been approved. So I'm not surprised with that, by the way. But did he die really of the metastasis itself, or there was another reason? Because most of the time they die with prostate cancer
rather than
because of it. As Dr. Shannon said, yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, the point is, as Ms. Tarr is making, it's a slowly progressing tumour. The problem is, and I keep saying this over and over again, dear, as you know, it's not the tumour you can see, you worry about, it's the stuff you can see. And the problem is that because prostate cancer does go to bones, it has the same metastasis to bone, you could have deposits of prostate cancer throughout the body for many years before it becomes evident. So that part of the treatment for the prostate cancer is, beyond the removal of the prostate gland, is additional treatment, hormone treatment, and so on and so forth, to try to control the disease in other parts of the body.
Another listener, I guess we'll probably get a few along these lines. Dr. Taha says he's 62. His PSA is, now it looks like it could be 6 or it could be 0.6. I'm trying to ascertain that. Okay. Is 0.6 more common? Or
well, we'll come back for the same. So the what I call it by abnormal PSA numbers is actually age related. But overall, we use the cutoff of 4. Anything above 4 or 4 is abnormal PSA. But overall, my answer for all the patients, he need to have a clinical assessment. We don't take one reading as a red flag for anything, to be honest with you. And overall, at the level of GP, I think Dr. Shannon will answer that. They repeat the PSA more than once before they flag it to us. So need to see someone.
Standard advice is, if somebody has a PSA that's over 4, let's say they're 5 or 6, the first thing we'll do is repeat it after 6 to 12 weeks first, and then see what the story is. So, I mean, you would never go by a single reading. And the point we're making is that while people generally like to be say, look, I've got this reading, what does that mean? I can understand. But the reality is that in the real world, we're taking that one piece of information in conjunction with many other pieces of information, and on the basis of that then make a diagnosis and decide on management.
How can somebody survive without their prostate? Does it have any effects?
So that's what I mentioned earlier at the beginning. It's a secondary gland. That means you can have a normal functioning system without it. But the idea is you have to remove the entrance into the bladder where the prostate is and connect it what left from the water pipe to the bladder. So there's no prostate in the middle. That's the whole idea of the operations. Then you, by doing this, is you maintain the continuity of the flow, so the urine can flow. and the male anatomically have two sphincters to control the water. One of them is beyond the prostate and one of them at the level of the prostate. So when you remove the prostate, you actually remove one of them, but you leave the other one intact, theoretically speaking. So they have no problem from a urination point of view. That's the most important.
So to reduce the risk of incontinence afterwards.
Yeah. Sexually, yes, you lose the prostate function, but it's not a primary function. The other way around, you can have a normal functioning sexually after that. So no problem.
Okay. Texter says, on passing urine, sometimes I have blood in my urine. What is the likely cause? No, I'm assuming that's from a male, given what we're talking
about. The first question for me will be how old the patient is.
They don't say.
And the second time is, what are the symptoms? It's the same answer again. It need to have a clinical assessment. Not all blood in the urine is actually a serious problem, if you like saying. So it need to have a proper assessment for that. The heavyweight point is age over 65. If it is visible, the patient saw it itself. If there was no infections in the urine, and if it keep recurring. In addition to that, I like to add, if there is any family history of cancer in the urological tracts. Mm. These are the heavyweight point, but we need to see the patient first before we call.
Because bear in mind the blood could be coming from the kidneys, could be coming from the bladder, or could be coming from the prostate, it could be anywhere down along the tract. So as Mr. Tarr saying quite rightly, they need to be appropriately assessed. Recurring blood in the urine certainly is something, it just needs to be investigated.
Okay.
The chances of having cancer, by the way, to add the last point, if you see the blood in the urine yourself, what you call by visible blood in the urine, the chances of having cancer is only 5 to 10%. So that's a very small figure. That's why we don't investigate everyone for the reason of bleeding in his urine unless he really fit of what we call by a high risk patient for investigation.
Okay, so it's more likely to be something else.
Yeah.
Most likely, yes.
Yeah.
Like most of the cases, if you like, figure wise, it'll be 95 to 90%.
And just to finish on a positive note, I presume there's loads of people walking around Tralee and Killarney at the moment who've had prostate cancer years ago, gone on to live very healthy lives afterwards.
Correct. Oh, there's plenty of people. So the new era now about what we call by active surveillance, which are a group of people, they are fit for treatment, they do have an early prostate cancer, we keep an eye on them by only repeating the bloods. Because in this group, they found if you intervene, you make their quality of life actually worse than keeping an eye on them. And the numbers showed that over 10 years of following these people, 85% of them living completely good quality of life without need for any intervention. So there is a huge space for you to live a very good quality of life, even with prostate cancer, definitely, with improvement and everything. The only thing I will add to this as well, the improvement in the quality of the assessment for people with prostate, high blood test, or prostate cancer is also improving. And that started from the level of detection down to the level of treatment. And the old school of doing the blood test and go straight away for the biopsy, people are starting to avoid that now. So we are going now for doing blood tests until we confirm he really needs to be investigated for possible prostate cancer. And the first step, all the guideline now advise for, is to do an MRI first.
MRI first.
Which is only scan of the prostate, and then take it from there. And the idea of doing that is you avoid doing biopsy unnecessarily in a people who have no prostate problems in the scan. On the same time, you avoid detecting what we call by insignificant prostate cancer. And that means I give you an idea of a prostate cancer that you might die even without being aware it actually existing altogether.
Yeah.
So that's coming up. And that's what we are adapting now in our services in Tralee as well.
Very good. Well, listen, the time is up, unfortunately, but I think we learned a lot this afternoon. And thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Taha, from the Bon Secours Hospital in Tralee. Eamon, thank you as always. We have lots of questions for you that are not related to the topic today, but we'll hold on to them for next week. Just to remind listeners that you'll be able to listen back to this interview on our podcast after the programme later on in the day. And we've also videoed it, so you'll be able to have a look back as well if you prefer to do it that way. Thank you to both my guests.